ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And today's topic goes out to all the animal lovers listening. We've all suffered the anxiety of having to rush our fur baby to the pet, to the vet. And even sadder is they can't talk, so it's hard to know exactly what's wrong sometimes. We put a lot of trust in veterinarians to find out what's going on and find a solution. But how much do we know about what they do? We're about to learn together with Sally Corrie, who's head of Veterinary Sciences at the New Zealand Veterinary Association. She joins me now. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Is day one of your education learning how to say that word properly?
Yeah, absolutely. And most of us still can't quite grasp it. So, okay.
So we'll just
not
say,
alone.
We'll just say vets. Let's have a look at preventative stuff first. Responsible pet ownership. What do you think of that as involving?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, we certainly advocate for responsible pet ownership. Owning a pet's a huge privilege, and it's really important that we're prepared, we know what we're getting ourselves into, and that we're going to ensure that, you know, our pets have a really good life. So responsible pet ownership, it involves a lot of planning before you get a pet. So you're aware of the costs that might be associated with pet ownership. You know what to do. You've educated yourself about vaccinations, flea control, worming, all the sort of routine preventative healthcare things. And that you're also aware for the unexpected situations as well. Pets are they're a long-term commitment, so you need to be in it for the long haul. And you know, some pets can end up costing owners, you know, quite significant amounts of money. So really important that you do your research and know what you're in for. They certainly shouldn't be an impulse purchase.
Would you even go as far as making a little spreadsheet of expected costs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's quite a few tools online if you go looking, just to give you, a very vague idea of what you might be in for cost-wise over the average lifespan of a dog or a cat. Obviously, they need a fair bit of equipment, so bowls, beds, leads, things like that. Food over the lifetime of a pet can actually add up to quite a significant amount. And, you know, the costs associated, like I say, with that preventative healthcare can be fairly significant as well. So, you know, if you look online, you'll see guesstimates around the $15,000 to $20,000 mark as a sort of starting guide for the average lifespan of an average dog. Now it can be significantly more or significantly less than that, but that just gives you some idea of what you might be up for.
Yeah, and that's before even anything goes wrong, which is often when you come
Exactly.
I mean you're there for the microchipping and the regular checkups, but what would be some of the common things and injuries that you deal with? I know that you sort of specialise in emergency treatment for pets.
Yeah, that's right. So I do a lot of emergency work, and the common things that we deal with is the trauma thing. So both dogs and cats hit by vehicles, road traffic accidents, a lot of bite injuries. So dog versus cat, cat versus dog, cat versus cat, that sort of thing, are very common incidents. You know, that's to name a few. Falls from vehicles, falls from heights, and just a lot of silly accidents. We also see a lot of cases relating to dogs in particular eating things that they shouldn't do, whether that be food things that are not suitable for them, or other environmental things that can cause poisonings and toxicities. That's quite a common one as well.
Is there anything in particular that dogs eat that you see over and over again?
So quite timely this time of year with us heading into the long Easter weekend, a lot of chocolate. So We do see a lot of dogs coming in after they've eaten often unbelievable volumes of chocolate. They're very good at finding chocolate in hidden spaces. So serves as a good reminder, like I said, coming into Easter. The other one as well this time of year that we do see quite a bit of is also raisins and sultanas. Obviously, they're a common ingredient in all our Easter buns and baking over the long weekend, and they can also be quite toxic to dogs. So they're the common ones this time of year.
They seem so random, chocolate and raisins and currants. Like, why do they disagree with dogs so violently?
Just they metabolize them slightly differently to what we do. So chocolate contains a substance called theobromine, which can act as a huge stimulant in dogs. So it can cause heart problems. So the darker types of chocolate, so the really rich, dark, high cocoa content chocolates, tend to be the worst culprits. And raisins and sultanas contain quite concentrated substances that can actually affect dogs' kidneys as well. So that's a little bit of an unusual one. And it's a little bit of a difficult one because we don't really know how much they need to eat in order for it to be a problem. So you could get unlucky. Your dog could ingest a few raisins and actually develop a problem. So we do try and make people aware of that one.
Well, obviously, anything sweet, dogs love it. Yeah. Well, while we're at it, what should you feed your dog and your cat?
So really, I mean, we just advocate for feeding them a good balanced diet. So most of our commercial pet foods, they are balanced and suitable for feeding. And they can come in a variety of mixed, you know, dry and wet foods. And just avoiding some of the tidbits and extras as well. So things that we often assume are safe, so things that are, you know, everyday items in our foodstuffs can be sometimes a problem for our pets. So even down to things, ingredients such as onions and garlic, that obviously are a very common ingredient for us, can actually cause problems for dogs. So just being a little bit careful and just sticking to the pet foods would be the best advice.
You can text in a question for our vet, Sally Corrie. Please know very specific medical questions. You'll need to go see a vet for that. Margaret in Hamilton says her cat recently went blind as a result of a stroke or a brain bleed, but otherwise the vet says she's very healthy. She copes well if kept in the same area each day, but she gets very bored and demanding because she can't see to run and play anymore. Any ideas of how to amuse her without constant human interaction, asks Margaret.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a difficult one for a cat that has lost their vision. I mean, cats that are kept as indoor cats do need to be provided with a fair bit of enrichment and stimulation. So obviously, without being able to see, that can be quite challenging to provide. So it's obviously doing as much as you can do whilst you're there. Cats also sometimes do like to have background noise as well. So if you're not home, even leaving a radio or the TV on just to provide a little bit of company for her would be a really good idea.
Oh, that's a lovely thought, yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how they do cope when they do lose their vision, even when it happens quite quickly.
So, do you think I should devote 15 minutes of my afternoon show each day to talking to the cats and dogs who are at home alone listening to RNZ?
Exactly. And each day they'll become accustomed to waiting for your voice, Jesse.
Okay. Well, on behalf of the owners of New Zealand, let me say, down! Good boy. one of our dachshunds had something that needed major orthopaedic surgery, says Jonathan. He'd just recovered, then he ate a karaka berry, which required yet another operation, and now our insurance has maxed out. That's a sad story.
Yeah, that is a really sad story. And, you know, unfortunately, back problems with dachshunds are quite common. So it is, again, that's something to be aware of before you do get a dog such as those. And it sounds like you've just had really bad luck with the karaka berry as well. Again, that's quite a common toxicity that we do see that's very unique to New Zealand, and tends to be a problem from sort of mostly around January to early April time. So we're almost through the worst.
Oh, thank you.
That said, it's a good reminder about pet insurance, though. We certainly do advocate for pet owners to investigate and consider their options for pet insurance, because it can certainly help reduce that burden, if not cover, obviously, all the costs. It's definitely a help when needed.
Oh, my gosh. My dog chewed up a tube of 0.5% hydrocortisone last night. Is that going to be a problem, says someone?
Probably not. If they seem fine, they probably will be fine. As a one-off ingestion, that shouldn't cause too many problems. They may just drink a little bit more water and just seem a little bit agitated, but that will quickly wear off. So it shouldn't cause any long-term problems.
Oh, great to know.
Good lesson to learn to keep that one out of the palm's reach.
And we won't spend the whole hour on accidental ingestions, but just one from Kathy in Kaipara, who's just noticed her dog getting totara seeds off her deck, and she's never seen it before. Is that something worth being worried about?
Not generally. We don't tend to see toxicities resulting from those, as long as they're not ingesting them in huge volumes. So if there are lots around on the deck, probably pays to just actually clear brush as many of those away as you can, just to reduce that exposure. But no, not generally a huge problem.
You mentioned vaccinations. When a dog or a cat gets vaccinated, what are they being protected against exactly?
So we vaccinate them against, there's a number of diseases. So it's a combination vaccine. So parvovirus being one of the more important ones, and I'm sure everyone's aware of the parvovirus risks and outbreaks currently in New Zealand. So parvovirus is a really infectious disease and can result in some pretty significant disease and often death in young dogs and puppies. So that's an important one. We also vaccinate them against canine cough, many of you will know that as kennel cough. A disease called distemper, hepatitis, and parainfluenza. There are a few other vaccinations we can give, but they're not as essential, but they're the main vaccines that we administer. So really important that you do get your new puppies vaccinated as soon as able, and make sure that you finish those courses of primary vaccines, as well as the booster vaccinations every year.
Is it true you do a few C-sections on dogs?
Yep, we certainly do. So it's not that uncommon for dogs to require a little bit of assistance when giving birth. And it's definitely more prevalent in some breeds, where some breeds may have the big heads and the big shoulders. So a lot of the breeds like French Bulldogs, Pugs, Chihuahuas, those sort of breeds do require C-sections fairly frequently, Always fun to do.
Yeah. Can you tell us about when you should see a vet, and might there be times where people go to a vet and you see their animal and think, actually, you could have probably sorted this yourself?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously the things we've discussed, so the potential toxicities and poisonings and obviously the significant trauma, you do need to be making contact with your vet as soon as possible. There are a few other more sort of vague things that perhaps will resolve on their own. So it's not uncommon for dogs to get mild tummy upsets and things like that. So they may be a little bit off for a day or so. You may have a little bit of vomiting and diarrhea, but otherwise their energy levels are largely unchanged. Now, with those sort of things, you can sometimes just let those ride out and they'll actually settle down on their own. So I think the main takeaway is, if you're worried, I mean, you know your pet better than any of us do. So you're the one with the best instinct. Is if you're worried or you've got any concerns, then give your vet team a call and just have a chat about what your concerns are. They'll be able to advise as to whether they think that's something that should be seen or can be potentially managed at home.
How often do you see animals with mental health problems?
Mental health problems. So
my term, sorry. Does that cover anxiety and those sorts of things?
Yeah, so I mean, definitely anxiety can be a problem for some pets. We do see quite a lot of, probably the common one is separation anxiety in dogs. So During the COVID and the lockdown periods, our pets got very used to having us around at home. A lot of people acquired new pets over that period of time, so they never went through that period of having to self-settle or adjust to being at home alone. So that's created a little bit of anxiety for some. And anxiety can be quite high in a number of cats as well. They can get particularly stressed, a lot of territorial issues, a lot of stress around what happens to them when they're outside and interacting with other cats in the neighborhood, etc. So, yeah, it's pretty common.
I'm talking to a vet today for our expert segment. How about after surgery? Do you have any tips for, by the way, Sally Corrie is her name. Sorry, Sally. And any tips for caring for a pet after they've had surgery?
So it really depends on what the surgery is. So some surgeries are fairly routine, like desexing. So with those pets, any pet that has sutures or stitches in after surgery is going to need a period of rest. So that may be complete indoor rest or just short exercise, short walks on the lead only. Probably one of our common issues that we come across is pets trying to lick or chew around any surgery sites, so trying to get to the stitches. So they will often end up having to wear one of the cones of shame, as we like to call them, just to try and keep them off the area. But post-surgery, I mean, when any pet is discharged home from your vet, you should be getting some fairly comprehensive instructions on how to manage them at home. And some things take, a little while longer to recover from than others. Our pets are mostly quite resilient. They bounce back fairly quickly, often surprisingly.
Can we take a moment to talk about responsible breeding? What do you see when it comes to breeding of dogs and cats? What are you okay with? What would you like people to think a bit harder about?
So we do advocate for responsible breeding. So if you do decide that a purebred or pedigree dog is the right choice for you and your family, then it's really about going out and finding the best breeder that you can. So a breeder that is they're responsible, they're taking all recommended steps to reduce the potential risks of any inherited disease. And that often involves some fairly full-on health testing of both parents before breeding, etc. And they're looking to try and improve the next generations of dogs that they're breeding as well. So ask around, do your homework. Dogs New Zealand has a very comprehensive list of breeders with all the breeds listed there. And that's where we would be suggesting you look first off. We do have a lot of unregistered breeders in New Zealand. So it's just being a little bit careful of what you're getting. And sometimes if a breed becomes particularly popular, we see a larger numbers of what we call backyard breeding. So anyone can call themselves a dog breeder. Doesn't always mean that they're breeding the best puppies or the puppies that are going to be free from potential diseases and problems. So yeah, just do your homework, most importantly.
Thank you, Sally. Lots of questions coming in from our listeners. Do we need to brush our dog's teeth, or would a carrot each night suffice?
Brushing dogs' teeth is a really good idea if you can get them used to it from a fairly young age. There are pet-specific toothbrushes and toothpastes available, and your vets will be able to give you some guidance on what to do and how. But daily brushing definitely does have some benefits, often easier said than done. But like I say, it's just a case of getting them used to it as soon as possible. Definitely more effective than the carrot, though.
My 12-year-old Siamese sometimes foams at the mouth. I'm assuming this isn't toothpaste. What is that about? He is unconcerned, reports one listener.
Yeah, so that can occur for number of reasons. So sometimes foaming at the mouth can actually be related to dental problems. So often worthwhile just making sure that their dental health is okay, getting them checked at the vets. Sometimes if they're an indoor and outdoor cat, Chewing on certain plants and things like that can also make them a little bit foamy. And actually, we do see in some cats that even a stress response, and they will actually start to dribble and foam a fair bit as well. So, always worthwhile just having a general checkup just to make sure there's no actual medical reasons for it. But if it comes and goes and they're otherwise seemingly okay, probably not something to be too concerned about.
Shout out to the listener who was driving, trying to focus on RNZ, but their dog was jumping around until I said down, and they instantly sat and became quiet, happy to help.
Perfect.
We've had a couple of texts about vomiting cats. Jane says her cat vomits a lot but maintains its weight. Is that a problem?
Generally not. We do cats, it's quite common for some cats to be quite vomity cats. I actually happen to own one of those cats, and it can be fairly frequent. So as long as they're maintaining their appetite, so they're still keen to eat despite the occasional vomit, and they're maintaining weight, there's no other issues, the energy levels are good. Not something to be too concerned about. Sometimes we do find that it's a case of playing around with diet a little bit and actually finding a specific diet that suits them, that can sometimes help reduce that vomiting. Sometimes it can be related to them grooming and ingestion of hair as well. So particularly for the longer haired cat breeds, that can cause a few vomiting problems, but not generally too much of a problem.
Sally, I can't believe you've got a cat. Surely you've had enough of it by the time you leave work each
I
day.
know. Two cats, two dogs. I'm a yeah, gotten for punishment.
Gosh, okay, thank you. Some practices raise ethical questions, things like declawing or debarking. What's your perspective on those sorts of things?
Yeah, we certainly advocate against those sort of procedures in New Zealand. So that is, definitely not something that we are in favour of. Yeah, no, not good procedures. So any sort of cosmetic changes should only be undertaken if there's actually a significant health problem or issue, not just for convenience.
Some poor person accidentally poisoned their cat with a flea treatment. Have you heard of that before?
Yes, I have. So it can sometimes be when people have mixed up the dog and cat flea products. So they are actually, or they can be quite different. So we have had dog flea products accidentally applied to cats, and that can actually cause some quite major problems. So yeah, just be a little bit careful that you are actually applying what you think you're applying, because like I said, the dog and cat products can, certainly not the same thing.
Someone wants to know if it's okay for them to share an ice cream with their dog.
Well, it's probably not going to cause any major issues. Other than every time you have an ice cream, your dog is going to be sitting there expecting. So, but no, it won't cause anything major. Generally, not too much chocolate in ice cream, so I'm sure you'll be fine.
Hi, Jessie. Our 7-year-old SPCA special has quite severe arthritis in one of her front elbows to the point that her leg is bent with a permanent limp. How do I know if she's in pain? Asks one person. They say she still enjoys going to the beach.
Yeah, so that's a really good question, actually. So a lot of our aging patients, both dogs and cats, do suffer with their joints. So osteoarthritis is actually very common, and our pets are very good at masking pain. So it can be a little bit of a challenge to determine. Now, if you've got a dog that has some visible changes, so you can see there's been a, the leg looks a little bit different. And they're limping, then we can assume that there's some discomfort associated with that. And it's always a little bit worse when it's a front leg versus a back leg as well. They do carry a bit more weight on their front leg, so front legs are not particularly forgiving. So I would really recommend that you do make an appointment with your vet and go along and just have a chat to them about some of the things that you could be doing proactively, because we do have a huge range of medications and options available for these dogs, which can really improve their quality of life. And yeah, you sometimes don't know how much pain they've actually been in until you start them on treatment, and then realize. So definitely worthwhile.
By the way, just to return to that previous one on flea treatments, I've heard from a couple of people who definitely used cat treatments. In fact, one was a kitten formula that they put on their kitten, and now having something called grand mal seizures, have never recovered, they reckon. Have you come across something like that before?
I mean, some of the flea products, they can, in the very rare circumstance, cause problems, but it's not common. And if you have had a particular reaction to a particular product, then again, definitely worthwhile having a chat with your vet, because that can be actually reported as an adverse event back to the manufacturers of that particular product. So that's quite an important step to take. So, but, you know, certainly don't, you know, for all the other listeners, don't let this, don't be put off, you know, using routine flea treatments. They are generally safe.
Quick word on parvovirus. It was in the news recently. What do people need to know about it?
Just that it's around, it's out there. We've definitely been seeing a huge number of cases, particularly in our more urban areas. So Auckland, Christchurch, Wellington, at the moment, it's an incredibly infectious disease, and it's heartbreaking to see these puppies and young dogs that are exposed to parvovirus, because they become very sick very quickly and they can die. And we know that it's preventable, so the vaccine is very effective at preventing parvovirus. So we just really urge people to get their puppies and young dogs vaccinated as soon as possible. Make sure they complete those courses of vaccinations, and until they are fully immunized, just take some precautions about keeping them away from public areas, making sure they're not in contact with dogs that may not be fully vaccinated, because it's so infectious, it's very, very easy to spread parvovirus. And you know, if you are unfortunate enough to end up with a dog with parvovirus, it can be quite costly to actually manage those dogs as well, far more costly than just going through the vaccination process. So please all get your dogs vaccinated.
Sally, it's been great to chat with you. You've been a star. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Nice to chat.
Sally Corrie, head of vet sciences at the New Zealand Vet Association.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.